live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful weekend in November wherever you happen to be. Of course, we've been crisscrossing the country as usual, living on planes, racking up mileage I can never redeem. We're taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. All right, you want to know where we are? Get out your maps, boys and girls. 36 degrees, 5 minutes north, 115 degrees, 10 minutes west. We are in Las Vegas, specifically at the Palms Hotel and Casino. And having a ball. Let's go right to the emails, and we got a lot of them to get to today. One from Pat in Augusta, Georgia. Next week I'm going to Honolulu for a pest control convention. You don't have to travel to Honolulu for a pest control convention. They have pests everywhere. But let's talk about this. She says, apparently the Hilton Hawaiian Village workers are on strike. What will that mean to me? Well, obviously more pests. Also, it seems there have been bed bugs reported at this hotel. Ironic, huh, since I'm in the pest business. Well, obviously, they wanted to make you feel at home, Pat. I mean, come on. What do you recommend I do if I find these little bloodsuckers in my room? Anything the hotels are doing to compensate guests for this awful experience? Yes, they give you a free pineapple and a couple of chocolate-covered macadamia nuts, and they walk you to another room. The bottom line is, it has nothing to do with Hawaii. It has to do with any hotel that you're checking into, not to mention your own home. Remember this, bed bugs are travelers. They love to travel in suitcases, and when you get to a hotel, the last thing you want to do is take that suitcase and put it on the bed. You put it on the suitcase carrier or you put it on the floor, and the next thing you do is you pull back the bedspread. And if you do what I do, you take the bedspread, you take it off the bed anyway, you throw it in the corner, never touch it again. What you really want to do is pull up the mattress on the box spring and look between the two, and if you see little streaks of blood, that means you have bed bugs. That's where they like to hide out. And at that point, you call the manager on duty, otherwise known as the MOD, and you get it changed. Then they'll walk you to another room. It's really as simple as that. Either that, Pat, or you have your keynote speech written for you since you're in the pest control business. You can talk about your own personal experience because that's how stories get told. Here's one from Muriel in Encinitas, California. Yesterday, I had to go through security at the Oakland airport. Because I had not been properly instructed to remove my watch, she said she would have to pat down my arm because my watch showed up on the scanner. She ran her hands up and down my arm. I totally freaked. I ranted and raved to every TSA supervisor for the next half hour, hysterically saying how I felt violated and traumatized. Muriel, let me tell you something. If all they're going to do is run their hands up and down my arm, I think it's a good day. I've had worse. I have been searching Google to find the name of the TSA director and find out what I have to do to ensure that I will not be touched by strangers in the airport in the future. Well, here's the deal. With all due respect to the TSA, which in my book usually stands for thousands standing around or taking scissors away, they have the right to do that. If you basically activate the metal scanner, they have to do a secondary inspection. It is simple as that. And my advice to you, Muriel, is the next time you fly, do what I do. It's counterintuitive, but what you really want to do is completely undress before you get to the airport. I'm not talking about getting naked, but I'm saying don't put on jewelry, don't put your wallet in there, put it all in little Ziploc bags in your carry-on bag, and you dress when you get through security. Why would you do that? First of all, you're going to hold me up in line because I'm waiting for you to clear security so I can get behind you. So bottom line is the rule is the rule. If you set off the metal detector, they have the right to inspect to see what that is. So, you know, I know you say in your letter to me, don't touch me. Well, if you don't want them to touch you, think about what you're wearing and put it away in your carry-on bag, and they won't touch you. All right? Now, if they are abusive to you, that's another issue. But the fact that they insisted on checking your arm because something showed up on the machine, they are totally within their rights, and they should check you. Sorry, Muriel, but that's the way it goes. Let's go to Bill, an email from Bill in Palm Springs. I was listening to your show this morning. You recommended to ship luggage by FedEx. We are going to Istanbul, and it seemed an excellent suggestion. I called, and the rate for a 150-pound piece of luggage was $700. I thought there must be some mistake. No, there's no mistake, except you didn't hear what I had to say on the radio. I don't ship my bags internationally by FedEx. I haven't checked a bag domestically in 9 years. That's when I use FedEx. And here's the other thing. If you do it domestically, and I'm assuming now, Bill, that you know where you're going at least 3 days in advance, and I'm assuming you have a place to stay, then what you do is you call UPS or you call FedEx and you ship it 3 days in advance ground. And for about $10 more than what the airline wants to charge you for losing your bag, they will actually do door-to-door service. You save 2.5 hours of your life by never checking a bag. And the only times that FedEx has ever lost my bags, it's been twice, was when they had freak snowstorms in Memphis, and they delayed my bags for 8 hours. Because if you want to ship a bag from Las Vegas to Henderson, it's still going to go through Memphis. It's just the way it is. But it's a very efficient system. Internationally, not a good idea for three reasons. One, you already experienced it, expense. Two, overzealous customs agents who will keep it in a bureaucratic netherland for two extra days. It's just not worth it. But domestically, I mean, it's a slam dunk. And for those people listening to this show who are thinking of taking a cruise, there's another way to do it. First of all, you should never fly to the cruise ship on the day that you're leaving, because if your plane's late, ship's going to leave without you. What you do is you go a day early and FedEx your bag so they're at the hotel early anyway. I mean, save yourself a day either way. And when you come back, do the same thing. Why would you want to schlep? And when you come on the return flight, who says your dirty laundry has to be there by 10:30 the next morning? Nobody. Do it a 3 day in advance as well. So I hope I've answered that. The bottom line is, there's a way around madness, and there's a way around stupid common sense mistakes that airlines and hotels and cruise lines make. My biggest pet peeve right now is what I call preclearance. I mean, we did the show recently in Bermuda. What a piece of cake it was leaving Bermuda. I cleared U.S. Customs in Bermuda. I saved 2 hours of my life by doing that. You can do the same thing in the Bahamas, in Canada. You can do it in Shannon, Ireland. But why shouldn't we have preclearance in high-volume areas like London and Paris, Mexico? It's an easy thing to do. The technology exists for them to get all the information that they need ahead of time in that two-hour period that you have to be at the airport anyway, so that they perform to the rules and regulations of the Department of Homeland Security and getting the manifest out and doing all the customs checks they've got to do. It saves so much time, and guess what? It saves so much money. Why? Let's think that you were going to go from the Bahamas to Miami, and you couldn't clear security ahead of time. You had to clear, not security, but customs. You couldn't do preclearance. You had to do it in Miami. Well, a lot of people have to do that when they come in from the Caribbean other than the Bahamas. And guess what happens? You have to wait for your bags. There's a huge line. Customs in Miami is the last flight out of Saigon. We know it. Everybody's seen it. And as a result, your bags misconnect. You misconnect. How much does that cost you? How much does that cost you in terms of lost productivity, time, effort, energy, stress? What does it cost the airline in terms of having to accommodate you on flights you weren't even supposed to be on, and extra cost and expense there? It's a no-brainer. If I was the president right now, the first thing I'd do is say, okay, here's how we make the borders even more appealing and more friendly to our foreign visitors. We do pre-clearance because they already entered the United States before they've ever left home. Welcome to America. Not this big, long line that awaits them in Miami. That's not a pleasant place to be. All right? I'm not just singling out Miami. Any U.S. airport like Dallas, JFK, LAX, it's a joke. So that's my diatribe on pre-clearance. I'll be staying on this until it changes. Back with more, including the owner of the Palms Hotel, George Maloof, right after these messages.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Travel question or comment? Need advice? Jump on board now by calling the show at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back. 18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the city of Las Vegas, reporting from the Palms Hotel and Casino, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER, and you know the drill. If you can't get through on the phones, email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And why we, by the way, what we do every week at this time is we encourage you to go to our website, which has the imaginative name of petergreenberg.com, to get the comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that essential hard work in Haiti, in Western China, in Chile, because remember they had an earthquake too, and of course the Gulf. Lots of things that you can get involved in personally, physically. It's not just donating money and texting on your phone. You'd be amazed at how you can get actively, physically involved, because a volunteer vacation is the best vacation you can give yourself, because you're giving back to so many other people. Joining me now, a regular on our show every time we come to Las Vegas, the Honorable Mayor of Las Vegas, Oscar Goodman. Mr. Mayor.
Hi, Peter. How are you? It seems like we just did this yesterday, but it's amazing how many things took place this past year.
I know. And you're still here. It's unbelievable.
I am still here.
You are definitely a fixture.
They have not impeached me yet.
Now, normally when we talk, you've got a drink in your hand.
And two showgirls by my side.
I know. What's the matter?
Well, I'm imagining it now. So you may not be able to enjoy it as much as I am.
I'm imagining it. That's about as close as I get, too.
I understand.
Let's get serious for a second, because you know and I know that for a period of about two and a half years now, you guys have been getting kicked. Whether it was the president saying don't go, whether it was the AIG and the, what we call the, you know, the problem that I would call the nobody wanted to get a pedicure when Rome was burning. Mm-hmm. You know, the meetings and conventions were in the toilet for a while. Are things turning around?
Absolutely turning around. There's no question about it.
Why?
Well, I can't tell you why. I think Las Vegas had the infrastructure in place all along. You know, we had the best casinos, the best hotels, the best food, the best shows, the best shopping, the best of everything. The problem was the rest of the world was suffering, and we rely on them coming here and having a good time and doing serious business at the same time, but spending money. They didn't have the money that they used to spend in the past. That's the only difference. The crowds are good, but the average daily rate, as we call it here, is down. But I think as the world comes back, as the economy comes back, people will start spending again, and then Las Vegas will be right where it always was, right at the top.
I always talk about Las Vegas as one of the great branding success stories when things were working well, meaning that whole concept of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
It still works. It still works.
Really?
Yes, it does. No, we were a little concerned because the message after the president made his remarks about 2 years ago was not to come here because we're not to be taken seriously or we're a place of excess. But the truth of the matter is the convention authority went out and we spoke to our corporate visitors and wanted to know whether or not it was inconsistent to say, come to Las Vegas, do serious business, and at the same time have the mark, as we call it, what happens here stays here. And only 4% said that the, what happens here stays here should be minimized. The rest liked it and felt that it was no impediment. So I think it's a great thing.
I mean, you really couldn't change the branding by saying, oh, we have rules now, please come.
No, we don't want to have any rules here, that's for sure. We want everyone to be able to go to the cusp of legality, and if they fall over, that's their problem.
I'm going to write this down. I love that. Isn't that the name of your autobiography? The cusp of legality.
Well, it's either or the cusp of reality. I'm not sure.
So let's talk about what's changed, because if I go back and go down the strip a year ago,
yes,
you had a number of projects that were either halted,
phenomenal, yes,
but it was either halted or unfinished,
right,
or in bankruptcy. So give me the update.
Well, it's a great update. On December 15th, a new 250-story towers will be opening up just down the street at the Cosmopolitan, the Hard Rock.
And that's part of City Center.
It's next to City Center.
Yeah.
City Center, of course, went up just phenomenal with three different major buildings over there. Wonderful shopping, great restaurants. We have the Hard Rock. They expanded. Planet Hollywood expanded with towers. Even in our downtown, the Golden Nugget put up the Rush Towers there, a beautiful $500 million investment.
Let's talk about downtown for a second,
yes,
because people forget about downtown.
Well, they shouldn't forget about downtown. Downtown is an integral part to our community here. It's the old Las Vegas. It's a different kind of experience. You come out here to the Palms, this is hip, it's chic, it swings. Downtown is more of a casual, strolling type place where you could go in one joint or to another. Experience a lot of different experiences, a little different than the Strip, but both are important ways to enjoy yourself while you're out here. We have the Viva Vision down there. It's a canopy where they show wonderful movies that you can look up. We have about 18 million visitors there a year, which is incredible. It's a well-kept secret. And, of course, when the Mob Museum opens up, which is my baby.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yes. The Mob Museum.
Wait, for the interest of full disclosure, in the movie Casino,
yes,
you played?
I played Oscar Goodman. I played myself. Yeah, that's the only reason I became the mayor, because after I played in that movie, Peter, I wasn't getting any phone call for parts. And I decided to run for mayor because I knew that in order for somebody to make a movie in Las Vegas, they had to get a permit. So I figured if I'm the mayor, I'd be able to require a part for me if they got a permit.
So let's ask a question. Since you've been mayor and since you're in charge of permits, how many parts have you had?
A lot. I've ended up on the cutting room floor more than any other mayor in the history of the world. But the good news was after I screamed and yelled at Jackie Chan, and I got myself into the DVD on Rush Hour 2, and then on Ocean's 11, cutting room floor, and then they made a great movie called Angel Blade.
Jerry Weintraub cut you out of the movie?
Absolutely. I'll never talk to him again. They made a great movie, Angel Blade, and I play the part of the mayor, of course, and they told me it was going to be an exotic thriller. It turns out it's an erotic thriller, and I am in that movie, Peter.
On the cusp of legality.
There you
go.
Didn't
know. It's an erotic thriller, and you're playing yourself. Hello?
Yes. Yeah, well, you know, a guy could have some secrets.
All right, let's go back to what we started talking about, the Mob Museum.
Yes. When I was first elected, I looked out of my window at City Hall and I saw an old post office courthouse where I tried my first federal case back in 1966. And I said, what's happening to that building? And they said, we'll check into it. And we were able to have it declared surplus by the federal government. We bought it for a dollar with the understanding that we would renovate it to its original condition, very costly, but well worthwhile because we're not imploding things around here anymore. We're trying to preserve our history. And then I thought to myself, what kind of museum could go in there? I love watercolors, but nobody would visit watercolors. I love porcelain. No one would visit porcelain. And then I said, why are we different? You know, why is this place different than all other places? And it's because of our background. We came from the mob, and the law enforcement came in, and they destroyed the mob. And what a great story that would be. And that's the genesis of the Mob Museum. We hired Dennis Barry, who did the Spy Museum in Washington, D.C., and the Rock and Roll Museum in Cleveland. He's going to do a phenomenal job for us here. And it's as cool as it gets.
I have to tell you, when I saw the movie Casino, I related to it so well because when I was a correspondent for Newsweek, I was in charge of doing the interviews with Alan Glick.
And I was
sitting there in his office, and he had – I'm not making this up.
Oh, I was there.
He had a paper shredder on his left and a paper shredder on his right.
Right.
Hello.
Well, what could I tell you? That was the beginning of shredding in America.
That scene where the FBI ran out of gas and landed on the golf course, it actually happened.
As a matter of fact, a woman – who is the hostess at the Las Vegas Country Club, sent the picture to me of the plane on the golf course, which will be going into the Mob Museum.
Now, here's a funny story you didn't know. I was doing a story for Newsweek a week earlier up in Alaska on a guy named Jesse Carr, who ran the Teamsters in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And they were considered to be so corrupt up there, and I'm up there talking to them about the pipeline. And who walks in the office? Frank Fitzsimmons,
right,
who looks at me and goes, what's he doing here? Right?
Yes.
A week later, I'm in Alan Glick's office doing another story. Frank Fitzsimmons walks in and goes, I'm a dead man.
No, you said, what are you doing here? No, I represented all those fellows in real life. And if I had only known what I was doing, I had to find out what I was doing by seeing the movie Casino, okay? Before that, I had no idea. If I knew what I was doing, I would have owned a private plane by then.
Just don't land on the golf course.
No.
Mob Museum. When does it open?
Well, I was hoping it would open before I'm term limited out, but it looks like the opening will be in October, about a year from now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Very excited.
What are the actual exhibits going to be in there?
Everything. We have purchased the St. Valentine's Day Massacre Wall. That will be in there.
Cool.
A lot of pictures will be taken there. We've got, well.
Any sledgehammers from Tony the Ant?
Well, we're not going there.
Okay, fine.
I had a case up in Boston where the federal...
Played by Joe Pesci, by the way, in the movie. Yes.
Where the federal government had intercepted a mafia induction ceremony. They surreptitiously entered a home where the ceremony was taking place, and I saved the tape that was played during the hearings, and I have given that to the Mob Museum, so everybody will be able to listen to a real mafia induction ceremony.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And when you go in, you're going to be mugged, you're going to be booked, and you're going to be printed. You will have your picture taken, which I hope you'll pay for on the way out. And
well, you're taking your cue from Disney on that one.
Well, no, it's going to be really neat. It really is. The history. You know, it really is the history of America. It's not just the history of Las Vegas, because all these fellows who were involved in the founding of Las Vegas, the reputed mobsters, they all came from other places.
Wow. Amazing stuff. And just think, a year ago, you could have gone bowling down the strip.
Well, that's true, but it's really coming back. I went to a wedding on Saturday night. Folks came in from all over the country to attend it, staying at the various hotels and casinos. I spoke to my friend George Maloof and asked him how the weekend was. Everybody said it was on fire around here, which is terrific.
Amazing. The mayor of Las Vegas, Mr. Oscar Goodman, getting up early as usual, but no gin in his hand and no showgirls. I'm upset with you.
Well, see, you're wrong. You assume that I got up early. I haven't gone to sleep yet.
We'll be back right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis. Avis, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
And we're back, 33 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg here with you, coming from Las Vegas and the Palms Casino Resort, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. A number of years ago, they announced they're going to build a casino not on the Strip, not anywhere near the Strip, and all of a sudden it was an overnight success. And then they added another tower. They added Fantasy Suites. They never stopped. And the owner's a buddy of mine. His name, George Maloof, and he's actually gotten up early enough to talk to me today. You never sleep.
Not too much. I get up early.
Give me the situation report if you can, George. We had the mayor, talking about things turning around here. But it's been tough.
I mean, it's been 2.5 years. It's been very tough. But we feel it coming back, particularly on the weekends, are very strong. And, you can't keep people away from Las Vegas. So they're still showing up, and, we have so much to offer. So
I guess the question is, from a business perspective, anybody can fill their hotels if they sell their rooms for $3 a night.
Right, yeah.
That's your dilemma, isn't it?
Yeah, that's been the problem, rates. I don't think there's anything said there's no such thing as a rack rate anymore, I guess you could say.
Well, there never really was, except if you were an idiot enough to pay it.
But there were some idiots paying it, and now there are a lot less idiots. But
the travelers have gotten smarter. They know they can get deals.
Yeah, and they go right online. And so I don't know how you fix that. That's something that's the big problem for us as casino owners. And
well, I guess the words are, without nickel and diming your guests, I guess it gets down to value-added opportunities.
That's how you have to do it somewhat. That's been the biggest issue.
I was looking at City Center, which is humongous, as you know. It was years in the making, and so much capacity, so many extra rooms. The Mandarin's got a hotel over there, right? No casino, right? Like the Four Seasons above the Mandalay. And the Mandarin, like the Four Seasons, I mean, very heavy-duty branding, very high-end, very luxe. And yet they're offering, $149 a night rooms with $200 resort credits. I mean, that's unheard of.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with what they're doing there, but it is unheard of. It's crazy.
I know.
But things are getting better. Rates are going up. They definitely are, from a really bad year. So.
Well, we're actually broadcasting from within one of the restaurants at your hotel called Simon.
Right.
There's been almost a sea change in the economics of Las Vegas, where it's gone from gaming to food and entertainment. I mean, when you take a look at the money that's being generated, how many different name brand chefs are here, how many different name brand restaurants, and of course, all the big names are coming back for entertainment purposes, and those tickets are not inexpensive, and they're filling the room.
Yeah, for the most part, they're filling the room. People come to Las Vegas for different reasons. Some of them don't come for gambling or gaming anymore, so it's changed.
But the basic model upon which you built this hotel, it was gaming and entertainment, but first of all, gaming, wasn't it?
Well, both. I mean, we have a lot of entertainment, great restaurants. So it was a mixed, plan when we built the Palms. We rely on local people, people coming from the Strip. So pretty diverse.
How much of your traffic is local?
Depends on what revenue source. Slots, pretty much all local. Table games, probably half. Obviously, the rooms is, not local.
Okay, stupid question. When the economy was in the downturn, did you change the limits on the tables or the minimums?
No. No, we tried not to play that game. The players play differently, I can tell you that. They don't
really
stick around as long as they used to. So
I was talking to my friend Alex Wynn, Alex Strada, who runs the Alex over at the Wynn, and that's a five-star restaurant. And I said, okay, what's changed? He said, well, they're no longer buying the $500 bottle of wine. They're at the $80 bottle of wine, but they're still coming in.
That's probably correct. And the way that people play. So when they play blackjack, if they get up, they'll leave the table, where in the past they used to give it back. So they've gotten a little smarter.
Uh-oh. Okay, so what do you do to keep them at the table, George?
You know, it's just something that's happened. It's kind of happening to everyone. The player comes in, he plays. It's called a short play. They don't play as long, and then they leave. So there's not much you can do. You can't poison them.
But, that was George Maloof. Whatever you do, don't order the Cosmo. No, but seriously, I mean, that hits your bottom line.
Yeah. They don't play as long. You want hands per minute. That's the whole key in the gaming business, volume. But, you know, they're still here. Las Vegas is the greatest destination in the world, in my opinion. I mean, there's so much to do here, and you can't keep people away from fun.
When we come back, I want to talk to you about how you discovered Vegas. I mean, I want to know about your very first trip to Vegas. Are there police reports involved? I just want to know. Okay, will you do that for me?
Sure.
And then I want to talk about the fantasy suites, especially the basketball suite.
Okay.
All right?
Great.
When we come back, George Maloof, the owner of the Palms Casino and, of course, Hotel and Resort, and I think Automobile Repair Shop, too. I think we'll throw that one in, too.
Thinking about it.
You bet. See, another revenue stream for you. All right, back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Simon Restaurant inside the Palms right after this.
Now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you, coming to you from the Simon Restaurant inside the Palms Casino and Resort in Las Vegas. We've been talking with George Maloof, the owner, and the question I posed to you before we went to the break, I'll give you my experience. My very first trip to Las Vegas, I was a correspondent for Newsweek. I was sent here to do an interview on Lounge Comics. I'd never been to Vegas before. I was staying at the MGM, the old MGM, which is now the
Bally's.
Yeah, which is now Bally's. And I had my credit card. I rented a car. I had $20 in my pocket. I wasn't going to spend any money. And, of course, you could only do the interviews with these guys starting about, you know, midnight. You know, so, and then the interviews would go from like midnight till 2, and then you went back to the hotel, and I'm walking back to the hotel and coming through the main lobby at like 2:30 in the morning, my very first time in Las Vegas, and of course you can't get to the elevator without walking through the casino. What a coincidence. And I had $20. I figured, you know what, I'll sit down at one of these $5 tables. I could not lose. It was out of control. And by about, I'd say 4:30, quarter of 5 in the morning, I was up to like $3,000, And, you know, this is way back when, you know, that was a car.
What were you playing?
Huh? Blackjack, yeah. And,
wow.
Yeah. And then I got stupid because the guy next to me was really mad at me because I was winning and he was losing. And there was a space between us. So he took that. There was another person there. So they took that space and they're going to change the rhythm of the table. So I got angry and I put out $1,500. Now, the table limit was only $500, but it was their money. So they said, fine. Right? So I put up $1,500. And and here's what the guys got. The guy at the first base got like a 19. He wasn't going nowhere. The woman next to me got a 17. I get a 13. And the dealer's got a 10 showing. And I figured, you know, here comes stupidity, right? I only came in with $20, so if I lose all this, I've only lost $20. So I doubled down on a 13 against a 10. So I got $3,000 on the table. I mean, pit bosses are coming through the ceiling. I mean, they thought I was card counting. I didn't know what I was doing. Guy gives me an 8. I walked out of there with $6,000. But wait, then, every George Raft movie I'd ever seen in my life, I thought, they're going to kill me. I'm going to die. So I ran up to the room with $6,000, $6,000 bills, and I figured, I got to get some sleep because my next interview is not till midnight, right? So I tried to move all the furniture over against the door so they couldn't come in. All the furniture was bolted against the wall. I couldn't do it, right? So I got so scared, I went out to the airport, right? PSA was then flying. I went to the airport, and I bought like a $16 ticket to go back to L.A., right, with all this money, waited in front of Bank of America to open up, right, on Wilshire Boulevard, went in there at 10 o'clock, opened the safe deposit box, threw it all in, took $20 back, ran back to Vegas, and went to sleep. That was my first visit to Las Vegas.
That's a great story.
That's the only time I ever won here, I think.
Yeah, you always win the first time. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about your first time.
My first time to Las Vegas, I think I was around 10, and I stayed at the Las Vegas Hilton, and I was trying to stay in the Elvis suite, but I never made it. So at that point, I was with my parents and just really fell in love with the town and the excitement of it. And my brothers used to tease me because I knew everything about the casino floor, every casino floor in town, and I always know where the bathroom is because I just would literally study the different casinos and the layouts. And
why?
Just because I was fascinated with the gaming business really young.
And the significance of the bathroom?
Just knowing, I used to draw the map out the casino floor, and I knew where all the bathrooms were and the gift shops and the lounges. And
I mean, all the places you were allowed to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
I decided to come to school here in Las Vegas. Started hanging out in the local type casinos, understanding that people do gamble locally here.
So you were downtown too?
Mostly on the there's a few off the strip,
right?
Like the Gold Coast, which is right across the street from the Palms, and it was opened back in 1986 when I was in school here, or Sam's Town or Palace Station, and spent a lot of time kind of studying the local formula, the local market. And
did you think the key was the local market?
Well, it was a way to get involved because we didn't have the money to build a big place on the strip. So I talked to my family about opening up a smaller place that would cater to local people. So that's what happened. The Fiesta opened in 1993. And
how small was it?
It was pretty small. You know, it was small, but it grew. We were always under expansion until I sold it, you know, 8 years later. So.
And now this.
Right.
And this is not just one tower. This is two towers. When we come back, I want to talk to you about the design of this hotel and all the crazy stuff you've got in the rooms. I mean, seriously, I mean, you know.
A lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, back with more of George Maloof at the Palms. Peter Greenberg here, back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you, coming to you from the Simon Restaurant inside the Palms Casino and Resort in Las Vegas. We've been talking with George Maloof, the owner, and off camera, off air, you just said to me, I can top that story if you're winning the $6,000. Okay, go ahead, top it.
You know, it was probably about 20 years ago. I was in town. I was playing craps. I was down to $30.
And, what'd you start with?
Probably 500.
Okay.
500, but I was down to my last 30.
Where were you playing?
At the Hilton.
Okay.
Las Vegas Hilton. And I turned it into 12,000, and my brother, Phil, was playing with me. I think he won 8,000. So we both got down to 30 bucks apiece and just cut a roll.
Wow. And is that the only good story you've got?
I've gotten a few other ones. Lots of bad stories the other way, too.
But here's the thing. As an owner, though, you really can't gamble in your own casinos.
You can't gamble in your own casino, but you can gamble in other places.
So basically, you go there to lose money.
Right.
I just want to check that out.
Nice.
All right. So now this is an opportunity you had. Okay. You sold the Fiesta. Now you're going to build the Palms, right?
Right.
Not just one tower. Now you got two. But you said, okay, if we're going to do this, let's have some fun. Let's get crazy. You got crazy.
Yeah. We got a little crazy.
Yeah. Tell me about the rooms.
Well, it started with the Real World Suite. which is part of the first tower. We hosted the Real World Las Vegas, and we created this really incredible suite that became kind of an icon, much like the Elvis suite did in the early or the late 60s, early 70s at the Las Vegas Hilton. So this became like the most famous suite in the world, very popular. And when we decided to build a second tower, we wanted to create what we call the fantasy suites, which consisted of suites with basketball courts, bowling alleys.
Now, with all due respect, I mean, the Maloof family also owns a small basketball team.
Right.
So this was nothing that was new to you.
Right.
Except in a room.
In a room.
I mean, you have to have really high ceilings.
Right, high ceilings.
I mean, seriously high ceilings, right?
High ceilings.
And you got a basketball court in there. We're talking hardwood floors.
Hardwood floors. It's an incredible room. I mean, it's spectacular.
I think one of the largest Murphy beds I've ever seen.
Yeah, when you were there, you pulled down the Murphy beds, and they're NBA Murphy beds. There's three of them.
They're 8 feet long.
They're really long. So that room's a lot of fun.
Have the NBA guys stayed there?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Have they shot hoops?
Yes, oh yeah.
Have they been real games?
Shaq stayed there a few times.
Did he?
Yeah, he's brought his family and stayed there.
Oh my God.
So we have a wall with everybody's name on it.
But then you got the bowling alley.
We had two lane.
I would not like to be in the room under that.
Yeah. So I told the architect too.
And did they fix that?
They finally fixed it. Yeah.
they finally fixed it.
We had an issue with it for a while, but we got it fixed, I think.
Now, what about this tower?
This is Palms Place.
Yeah.
It's a condo hotel. Opened 2.5 years ago.
Tough time to open.
Worst possible
time. Tough time to open, my God.
But it's the most successful condo hotel tower in the world. We've closed on 400 units out of 599. And it's doing great. It's just caught on. We had a struggle there at the beginning.
Explain the concept of a condo hotel. As opposed to a timeshare, as opposed to just a condo.
It's pretty simple. A person buys a condominium. They give us the rights to sell the room as a hotel.
So they put the rental pool in.
Yeah, and we split the revenue. So if we sell for $400 a night, the owner gets $200 and we keep $200. Pretty simple.
Yeah.
And they own the condo, and they do what they want with it. And
of the people who own these condos, how often are they actually here?
Pretty often. You know, they use them for all kinds of things, and their friends use them, and they have a place in Vegas. They love it, and they love this tower. It's great.
And then you did something, I got to say, that I never thought was going to work, because I thought it was dated. I thought it was out of time, right? And yet, it's done okay. Playboy.
It's done great.
Unbelievable.
It's done great. Yeah. Just people are fascinated with the brand. I think the TV show brought in a whole new audience.
Yeah.
Of a younger, you know, female audience that watches it and is fascinated with Hef. And it's been a great partnership.
If you just got Hef's girlfriend to show up, you were in.
Yeah.
Right?
They show up.
Now, this is now what? The only remaining Playboy Club in the world, right?
We were the first after a period of about 25
That's
years.
That's what I'm saying, right? They closed all the other ones, and this is it.
But they're opening two more.
Where?
Macau, and I can't remember where the other one's going to open. I'm not sure.
All right, but in the United States, this is it.
Yes.
And you've got the sole right to do that in the U.S., is that the deal?
Right.
Wow.
Right.
And what's different about this than the original Playboy Club that I remember? You had to have a key, and I'm dating myself now.
A lot. You know, the atmosphere, the gaming portion of it. So it's, you know, full-blown blackjack, roulette.
So you've got bunnies dealing.
Bunnies dealing. The club itself is very plush. It's very sexy. It's fun.
Cool.
You know, people like to go up there and play blackjack. They can dance. So the
bottom line is you've just got to go to the basketball suite. Shoot a lot of hoops. Don't make too much noise in the bowling alley. Then you go down and gamble with the bunnies. Is that it?
That's right. Or then you can end up in the Hef suite, which is this 10,000-square-foot suite on two levels that Hef helped design and picked out all the pictures.
Yeah, but there's only one bad requirement. You have to wear a smoking jacket. And you can't wake up until 2 in the afternoon. That's you, Hefner. Still does. And drink a lot of Pepsi.
Right.
That's all he does. Pepsi, smoking jacket, wake up at 2 in the afternoon. George Maloof, the owner of the Palms Casino Resort Hotel, automobile repair shop, and basketball emporium. Did that get it?
That's great.
All right. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Palms in Las Vegas right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful November weekend wherever you happen to be. We've been living on planes, as you know, so get out your maps, boys and girls. 36 degrees, 5 minutes north, 115 degrees, 10 minutes west. We are coming to you from Palms Place Hotel and Spa in Las Vegas, Nevada, and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. Boy, talk about a place that's forever changing. Nothing ever stays the same. And even after 2.5 years of really bad economic news, it's still alive and kicking. And joining me now, somebody who knows a little bit about that. He's a columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal and the author of, I love this title, Vegas Confidential, 1,000, not 999, but 1,000 Naked Truths and Sensational Celebrity Tales, Norm Clark. Hey, Norm.
Hey, Peter. Great to be here.
Yeah, so you know, you've been around just a few years here in Las Vegas. How many?
11.
11, long enough to see some serious change.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of rooms to fill, but people are still coming. What would you say is the biggest change that you've seen, like, in the last 18 months? Because after that, it doesn't matter.
Well, in the last 18 months, we've seen a shakeout of the nightclub industry, unlike anything we've seen. I talked a couple nights ago to one of the great gaming pioneers, who said he's never seen,
When you say a shakeout, explain.
A shakeout in the sense that the nightclubs are getting sold. They're coming, the place like the Hard Rock is changing management with the nightlife scene.
And what does that mean? What does that mean for somebody who's coming to Vegas? Would they even know the difference?
Probably not in that sense. The nightclubs... They were one of the big drivers here for the first for most of this last decade, and I think you're seeing they're down 20 to 30%, but the
does that mean the girls are friendlier?
I think the pricing is a little friendlier. I think the packaging is a little friendlier. I wish they could get rid of the bottle service, because that's probably one of the biggest gripes that I've heard over the last decade.
Explain how that works, please.
You walk in to get a table. You have to agree to a couple bottles, and the bottles are about $400 each. And with
I would be griping.
Yeah, and that's...
Because I drink seltzer water.
And you can put, like, 4 to 5 people at your table, but you're not going to go through that much alcohol, and you're going to leave a lot on the table. Or, basically, you're forcing people to, in some cases, to drink a lot more than they normally would.
So, is that changing at least a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. I've heard... from people, I mean, I know that George Maloof told me even that's one of the things that he'd like to see, go back to another time. I mean, it's sort of a gouging sort of thing that gives Vegas a bad name.
Now, one of the things that gave Vegas a name was buffets.
That's right, and the Buck 99 buffet is now $29.99.
Well, they're not selling passes. All day pass. This is for people. If you weren't fat enough to begin with, and I'm saying this having lost 68 pounds, but if you weren't fat enough to begin with, you can buy a buffet pass that gives you 7 opportunities for a day to just eat as much as you can actually shove into your face.
Yeah, that's the that's one of the new things. Everybody's thinking out of the box. They're trying to figure out ways to get people in and keep them coming back.
Now admit it. Have you done one of those fasts?
No, I haven't. I haven't. I'm with you. I lost 30 pounds in the last year, and that's wouldn't work that way.
No, but people do it, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that.
And let's face it, if you're going to be in Vegas and you want to spend $25 for a buffet pass for a day, quite frankly, that's value.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
It is.
Of course, the hope of the casino is when you're not eating, you're gambling.
I had friends come in from Nebraska last week, and they got rooms free at Aria for a weekend. Unheard of. I mean, that's part of the packaging that you're seeing now. They got...
Are these like heavy gamblers?
No, they were not heavy gamblers. It's a young couple. I mean, in their...
How did they get the rooms for free?
I think they've gambled, but I think anybody now that gets in the database is getting offers to get incredible deals.
Wow.
And you're getting thrown in. You're getting restaurant credit and gambling credit as well.
Wow. They usually give me like a coupon for a free breakfast and say, get out. No?
No.
So those things are changing. So basically, from a consumer point of view, it's still a buyer's market.
It's amazing the bargains that are here now. I believe that the bargain I saw the other day was, I think Cirque is offering something like the equivalent of that buffet package.
Yeah.
Very, very similar to that.
Wow.
I don't have the exact numbers on it, but it's three show packages, that sort of thing.
And normally those shows are not inexpensive.
No, that's, yeah. Yeah, you're talking. When I got here, I think, Peter, there were probably two places that were $100 tickets. I think Siegfried Roy was one, and I can't recall the other, but now you'd be hard-pressed. It's got to be at least ten to a dozen.
Right. I mean, everything from Cher to Bette Midler to when Elton John was here.
All the Cirque shows.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
By the way, one of the Cirque shows I still love more than any other show they do is Ka.
Yeah.
Only because of the engineering of that show. I mean, the stage is the star.
The stage upstages the show.
It does.
Yeah.
The engineering of that show is worth the show itself. Just the way that when that thing gets perpendicular, I'm going, how did they do that? That is huge.
True marvel.
Somebody who majored in engineering in college was able to basically prove himself on that one.
Yeah, without a doubt.
What would you say right now is the best single value in Las Vegas?
Well, the best single value, I think, is still if you go to the Internet, you're going to find some amazing deals to get into the Wynn and Aria and places, Bellagio, places that you never...
Bellagio never discounted, but they're doing it.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think they're all doing it. I think they
just don't want to admit it.
That's right. And the other thing is you're getting 50% off deals off strip that are unbelievable. But they're keeping those under hat because they don't want everybody showing up. They're not going to make any money if they...
And the best restaurant deal in town?
I'm...
And you're the guy who didn't buy the $29 pass. What's the matter with you? I told you the best restaurant deal in town. If you're really hungry or you want to supersize your life, you just get the buffet pass.
Yeah, that's true. I wasn't thinking in terms of that being a restaurant, but maybe I'm being snobbish.
Well, actually, no. There's some great deals out there. In fact, it's interesting. You can go to Joel Robuchon at the MGM or go to his smaller restaurant and get a better deal.
Yeah.
You could do Alex at the Wynn or go to Strata and get a better deal, and it's still the greatest same food.
Sure.
Cool.
Sure. No, it's outstanding.
All right. Norm Clark, the columnist for the Las Vegas Review Journal and the author of Vegas Confidential, 1,000 Naked Truths and Sensational Celebrity Tales. Thanks, man.
I appreciate it very much, Peter.
We'll be back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Got a travel question or comment? Need advice? Jump on board now by calling the show at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Palms Casino and Resort, or Racino and Cazort, whatever works for you in Las Vegas. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, You know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And as we do every week at this hour, we encourage you to go to our website with the imaginative name, petergreenberg.com, for a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that essential hard work in Haiti and Western China and Chile and, of course, still in the Gulf. You know, it may not be front page news where you are, but it's still front page news where we are. This is a rebuilding effort, especially in places like Haiti, that's going to take a decade, if not a generation and a half. And if you take a look at this list, you might pleasantly surprise yourself to realize how many different ways you can get actively, physically, and presently involved as opposed to just donating money. And it's the best vacation you can give yourself because you're giving back to others. So please check out that list. And if you do go down there and if you do help out, let us know. Call us and we'll put you right on the air so you can tell us what you're doing and how others can help as well. Joining us now, a regular on our show, the Vice President and Editor-in-Chief for Travel Weekly, our good pal Arnie Weissman. Hey, Arnie.
Hello, Peter. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. So here we are. We're in mid-November. You know, it's we've had a year of consolidation. We've had a year of mergers with more to come, with more alliances being formed, with brands being more confusing than ever to try to figure out who does what to whom and where. What's your take on this, and how does it really affect the traveler?
Well, it's interesting. There's a number of things. The biggest in terms of the travel industry that we're looking at right now is, of course, the United Continental merger. And that there's two cultures that in some ways couldn't be perceived more differently. And that perception, by the way, is also from their own employees. There was a very interesting, the story of Continental when it came out of bankruptcy, and CEO Gordon Bethune famously just started looking at his employees who had felt beat down and mistreated, and you know, just all sorts of problems with the previous ownership administration, and he just reached out to them and treated them very, very well, and gave them all sorts of awards and incentives. I saw, it was very interesting, one time I saw Gordon Bethune come off an airplane, and he was being recognized by Continental employees and by some passengers. He gave all his attention to the employees. This was just sort of almost his hallmark, right? So, on the other hand.
Well, before we get to the other hand, let's talk about Bethune, because I think he's an interesting model of what Continental did. I mean, that was an airline that was really in the dumper. It had the worst passenger service reputation. It had the worst employee relations. And Bethune actually turned it around. In fact, talk about a self-serving title for a book, but you got to give him credit for it. He did his own book called From Worst to First.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's I don't know if you've been on this website, Peter, Glassdoor.com.
No.
It is a really interesting website. It looks at companies and its own employees rate their management. And this is set up so that people who are looking for a job can go and to the website and see what sort of reputation, how people feel about their own company. Looking
okay.
at the airlines. By the way, it was started, interestingly enough, by the same guy who started Expedia after he left Expedia.
Sure.
So, but anyways, by far the worst rated airline CEO is Glenn Tilton. He got rated 13% as kind of approval rating, 13%. Just by contrast, Gary Kelly of Southwest had the top approval rating of 95% of his employees being very satisfied, right? So he, Glenn Tilton, is going to be the chairman of the new merged company.
But I'm going to make you a prediction.
Okay.
That'll last an hour. The minute that merged company happens and everybody gets settled in their positions, I would say within 6 months, Tilton will cash out and will be on a cruise.
Well, that could be. I mean, the president of new company, Jeffrey Smysak, is very much of the Continental tradition, and his relations with his employees is on a much sounder footing. So perhaps they will introduce that culture into employee relations, and that culture will rule.
Well, I hope it will, actually, because the United culture right now, I happen to say, is, and I, by the way, I have a long-time United flyer, and I'm sorry to say I really think it's a dysfunctional airline these days, because way before the merger, you know, the pilots didn't like management, the flight attendants didn't like management, the maintenance guys didn't like management. I actually was guessing that late at night when nobody was looking, I think management didn't even like management.
You know, the interesting thing about all this, too, is when Bethune was courting his own employees, you know, the purpose was not simply to make them happy. It was ultimately customer satisfaction is the end result, because it just makes sense. If you have a workforce that's motivated and upbeat, when they deal with the passengers are going to notice.
And well, you know, this is the age-old conflict between shareholder value and customer service.
Yes, and it's a very interesting. There's three. I see it as a three-legged stool that are sort of the foundations of profit. There's shareholder value, employee welfare, let's call it, and customer service. And what I think a lot of CEOs and even boards sometimes forget is that shareholder value is a result. It's not a strategy. If you sit and make every decision saying, well, which one is going to give us more shareholder value, you're going to be looking very short-term. You're not going to really be doing much for your company. But if you focus a lot of attention ultimately on customer service, frankly, and doing it through motivated employees, then you're going to create shareholder value like you had no idea. In fact, the University of Michigan and the University of Maryland created a kind of a paper stock portfolio of companies that had demonstrated high performance on something called the American Customer Satisfaction Index. And they went back testing in terms of looking at how the stock had done, and then in real time going forward. And they found that a portfolio of companies that do well in customer satisfaction outperforms the market as a whole by considerable margins. And
okay.
I think that says it all right there in terms of that debate, shareholder value, customer service.
Except for one small little glitch, and that is when the accountants are running the asylum, we all get crazy. And the bottom line there is, I'm going to ask you this question, Arnie. It's a tough one now. Here it comes. Are the airlines in the travel business or the transportation business? Are we customers or are we human freight?
You are human freight.
Thank you for sharing.
Well, I mean, the reason I said if you're going to look at it in that way, transportation or travel, they're clearly transportation. They don't they see themselves their association is the Air Transport Association, and I think you're familiar, Peter. I'm sure you are with the group U.S. Travel, which is kind of the de facto travel industry association. The airlines are often lobbying against what U.S. travel wants to do. They don't see themselves as part of the travel industry unless it's convenient.
Well, which is too bad, because if you go back to the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and even part of the 80s, all their advertising campaigns, all their branding was all about the great experience of traveling with that airline.
Absolutely. And you see some of the airlines that do really well today, Singapore, Emirates, Virgin. These are companies that clearly focus on customer satisfaction.
So the future for us now?
Well, the future is
Let's go back right to this, to the most recent thing on the table, the merger with Continental and United.
Yep.
Where do you see that going? Because, Arnie, in all due respect, you know, when a bank merges, the first thing they do with another bank is they have a press conference saying no branches will be affected, and 5 minutes later you're on your hands and knees to an ATM machine because you can't find a teller.
Yes. Well, there are going to be synergies. The companies have already talked about that they're looking at ways that they can operate more efficiently, which is always code word for, you know, they're going to be making cuts in certain areas. But that's not always a bad thing. As long as the problem that I worry about, frankly, with the airlines is they've gone so many years where they are looking at costs, and the people who looked at costs successfully are the ones who have risen to the top for the most part. And I'm afraid the marketing department, which has been under the thumb of, as you say, the bean counters for so long, you know, is there a culture where marketers have power within the C-suites of these airlines? I think it's a very highly questionable proposition. I'm not sure that they do anymore.
So the words value added are not really being discussed in the boardrooms very often.
No. I mean, you know, what's being discussed is the price of fuel. If we can save 10 cents on one thing that we do thousands of times a day, then the yearly savings is going to be X. That's being discussed. I mean, it's logical. It makes sense for them to be talking about these things. But if there isn't also, you know, a cabinet member with equal rank talking about customer satisfaction, talking about customer service.
It's not going to happen. No. Arnie Weissman, the Vice President and Editor-in-Chief for Travel Weekly. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Be back right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis. Avis, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the Simon Restaurant inside the Palms Casino and Resort here in Las Vegas, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And, of course, it's time to go to our Ask the Local segment of the show. But first, I have to tell you that my next guest, how appropriately, started with a summer job at Little Caesar's Pizza. And, of course, he learned everything he needed to know about the restaurant business there. Am I right?
Maybe.
No, don't go there. His name, Kerry Simon, the executive chef and the partner right here at Simon. I mean, how much did you really learn at Little Caesar's?
Well, I learned, you know, it wasn't really what I learned there. It was that I, well,
you learned,
I mean,
what,
yeah,
not to do. Maybe you learned what not to do.
Possibly. I mean, you know, but it was, I learned that I like to work with food. That's what I learned with, and that I liked making.
You like to work with pepperoni and extra
pepperoni,
cheese. Come on.
Dough. I made the dough and all that, and you know, it was fun. It was a lot
of
fun.
Could you spin a pizza?
Yeah.
Can you still do it?
I can still do it, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you serve pizza here?
We serve pizza here, yeah.
Gee, I'm shocked. So tell me, I mean, you know, there are only like 6 million restaurants in Las Vegas.
Right.
It's a precarious business.
Yeah.
How did you do this?
Why
did you do this?
I was here in Vegas. I did a restaurant in Bellagio called Prime with a Jean George restaurant.
Sure.
So I was here already, and I met Peter Morton. And he saw in what I was doing a certain style of food that could work for the Hard Rock. So that was like my first step before I came to the Palms.
And was it like new American cuisine at that point?
It was just about to break. You know, I mean, I called it kind of a jet lag food. It was all that kind of stuff that you kind of want when you've flown on an airplane for many hours. And so it was like,
I mean, you'll eat anything.
Well, basically.
Come on, what are you talking about?
No, you know, anything from tuna tartare to meatloaf. It's kind of like what my mind.
You wanted like basic, simple comfort food.
Yeah, I wanted family style things that were kind of fun, you know, that were like more accessible and affordable too.
All right. So then how did you translate that to a menu here?
Well, so what I did was that I basically took all the things that I really like to eat, and that's what I did with the menu. And so it was like, whether it was like I just said, from tuna tartare to meatloaf, it would be, you know, differentiate with everything, you know. So it was like salmon tandoori with quinoa or things like that, you know. It was just experimenting.
So you get a little wild.
Yeah. Yeah, you have things that are not just necessarily meatloaf style, but kind of cutting edge as well.
Do you still have meatloaf here?
Oh, yeah. One time I took it off the menu, and I had, like, people complaining, so it was like...
Well, that brings up a question. What was the one item you put on the menu, other than meatloaf, that you thought was going to be, like, not good, and then you took it off the menu and people went nuts, or an item that you thought, no one's going to order this, and you know, it went through the roof?
Well, I had the short ribs as an example of actually, the mayor's wife came into the restaurant. We took the short ribs off the menu. We were going to change it.
Oscar Goodman's wife. We just had him on the show earlier.
Well, okay, perfect. So he's a regular, and anyway, his wife came in the restaurant with him. The short ribs were off the menu, and she said, that's what I came for. I'm going to go. So
did she actually leave?
They left, yeah.
Oh, there's a wake-up call.
How fast
did the short ribs go back?
They were on the next day. And they were back the next day.
All right, so what was the item that you thought was going to be great on the menu that nobody ordered?
Gosh, nothing pops into my mind. I mean, there's been a couple of dishes that I thought were not necessarily going to be great. Like we have this pizza. It's a raw pizza, and it's done with wasabi and rice. And it's a pizza shell cooked and then finished with, like, tuna, crab. It's like a California roll in a way. And
it's a California roll with crust.
Yeah, basically. It's like basically that style. And I didn't think that was going to do well, but it's very popular.
All right, so here you are. You're operating Simon right here at the Palms.
Right.
Okay, it's 11 o'clock at night. Where do you go hang out to eat that's not in the brochure in Vegas?
Well,
where do you like to hang?
I go to there's this place called Raku. It's this restaurant that's like kind of Japanese.
Well, Raku would basically be like Japanese.
Yeah, it's like Japanese.
Yeah.
Firefly is another one of my restaurants that I go to. But I don't really get out here at 11. I get out here a little later.
Okay, so where do you like to go at 1 in the morning?
Yeah, those places, Firefly, and the Firefly is one of my
favorites. Like to go to Little Caesars.
Little Caesars. I do. I look for pizza sometimes.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Okay, where's the best pizza in town? Other than your place, of course.
I like Chow Chow a lot. I go there.
Where's that?
That's on Durango between Trop and Flamingo.
So, I mean, it's not in a hotel. You just got to know where it is.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think you just go online here and you find everything, you know. It's like, where's the best pizza or whatever. Pizza's pretty good here in town, actually. There's a few of them.
Is there a dish you can't do well here because it's in the desert?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think there's pretty much everything's, fit workable.
What about pricing?
Well, I'm a medium-priced restaurant, so, that's kind of what I wanted to be. I wanted to be very accessible to people.
You couldn't have timed that better.
Yeah, I wanted to be family style and that kind of fun sort of vibe here, you know.
So large portions and people sharing?
Yeah, well, not large portions, but, good sized portions.
Or small families.
Or small families.
Hey, come on, I'm trying to help you out here.
I know, you're doing a good job.
When was the last time you actually went to a Little Caesars?
Gosh, I think when I walked out of there, when I was my last day.
I sort of knew that was going to be the answer. That'll do it every time.
I moved on.
You moved on. I went from Little Caesars
to Dave's Italian Kitchen.
Went from Little Caesars to Big Carrie's.
The Big Carrie's.
And that's where we are right now, at the Simon Restaurant, right here at the Palms Casino. Hey, man, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
We appreciate that. And, of course, the name of the really cool pizza place in town is?
Chow Chow.
Chow Chow. See, yeah. We've learned something today. Back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Palms Casino right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back. 43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Palms Hotel, Resort, Casino, and Automobile Repair Shop. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER, and if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. Joining me now, an old pal and a regular on the show, he's a veteran travel writer and editor, Don George. Hey, Don.
Hello, Peter.
Now, you've come out with a new book, which I think is really great because it just covers the bases when it comes to travel, writing, eating, and all those little experiential levels. It's called A Movable Feast, 35 Stories from Chefs, Food Writers, and Travel Writers. So obviously people are liking to eat in this book, right?
Exactly. People are understanding what I've understood for a long time in my life, that food is one of the best pathways into the heart of a place. Unbelievable, unique food adventures that people have had all around the world.
I mean, we're just talking to Kerry Simon from Simon Restaurant here in Las Vegas, and he started at Little Caesars, and now he's figured out that keep it simple, it makes it the best way to go, as opposed to like overdoing it.
Absolutely. And I mean, these stories, some of them, one of my favorite stories in the book is about searching for the best barbecue place. It's a pilgrimage in Kansas City, a father-son pilgrimage about finding the best barbecue place in Kansas City. Now, that's a very quintessential American odyssey, I think. And I read that and I get hungry and I get all heartwarmed at the same time.
Well, it's interesting. I was not asked to contribute to this book, but I'll do it right now.
Good.
It's my search, and if you do another volume, let me know, because it's my search for the best rice pudding in the world.
Oh, wow.
And I found it. I found two of them. One, and you can only do it at 3 o'clock in the morning in Alexandria, Egypt, because you go to the bakeries there, and it's the most amazing rice pudding, only topped by right outside the covered bazaar in Istanbul. There's a quick little restaurant down the road there, and they do their rice pudding the way most chefs do their creme brulee. They torch it on the top, so it's got you know, it's that kind of a top where it's kind of a burned and crispy, amazing rice pudding. And every time I go to Istanbul, this is going to sound so blasé, every time I go to Istanbul, but it's true. Every time I go, that's the first place I head, because it's one of those signature dishes that you, once you get it, you don't let it go.
Yeah, I love it. Well, there's a bunch of stories in the book kind of like that. There's one set in Italy that they go down to the port in Genoa, and they just have this amazing meal, and they just want to replicate it over and over again. And
sure.
Anthony Bourdain talks about his favorite old Manhattan eateries. And these are the quintessential places that you just go back to time and time again.
And it's funny because about a year and a half ago, I was in Lisbon and I was with some friends, and I said, look, guys, you're going to think I'm nuts, but the best chocolate mousse in the world is in the Alfama district at a restaurant called Papa Assorta. And you really have to get to a cab driver who knows where he's going, because the streets are just so narrow and winding. But once you go there, they say, oh, we don't want dessert. We just want to have great seafood. I said, fine. Do what you want to do. I'm going there. And we went, and I said, and they said, well, wait a minute. You're just going to be served a little cup of chocolate mousse. I said, no, that's the point. It's not a cup.
Right.
And we got to this restaurant, and it came time for dessert, and they brought out huge plates, huge empty plates. And then the guy comes behind me with a bowl the size of like it's basically a salad bowl on steroids, and a huge ladle, and he hands you the bowl, and you serve yourself chocolate mousse.
Oh,
you feel, oh my God! My friends were back there every single night. I mean, that's, well, cool stuff, and that's the kind of stuff that's in this book, right?
Exactly. I mean, this is the thing. You're the perfect example of how food takes on such importance for all of us when we travel. It's not just nourishing our bodies, you know, it's nourishing our souls. It's nourishing our intellects about how do you make this? What are the ingredients that go into this? Oh, really, that's what you do in your kitchen in this country. Food just becomes this fascinating portal into the whole realm of a place. And so these stories are really all about people's experiences like that. And you know, food is such a passion for everybody these days. I mean, the reaction to the book has been amazing so far, and I'm very excited about it. And as the head chef for this book, I'm very pleased with how the meal has turned out.
Well, you know, you've got the entire range in here, from a woman named Laura Fraser, who writes about Italy in 17 courses, to, of course, who other than Tim Cahill. I mean, when you think about it, only Tim Cahill could write a piece on rooster head soup in Papua New Guinea.
I know, truly. And what he does with the rooster head soup is really amazing. It's really worth reading.
Yes, it probably involves a police report, but let's not go there. Unbelievable. The name of the book, again, A Movable Feast, 35 stories from chefs, food writers, and travel writers, not to mention rooster head soup in Papua New Guinea. But if you want the chocolate mousse recipe, you call me at petergreenberg.com. I'll tell you where to go for that restaurant in Lisbon. It's an experience you won't soon forget. Hey, Don George, again, thanks for joining us. And come back soon when you got more to talk about with more food, okay?
My pleasure, Peter. Always love talking to you. Thanks.
You got it, man. We'll be back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Palms in Las Vegas right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is brought to you by
Travel Guard. Visit travelguard.com/unlucky. Tell us what makes you the world's unluckiest traveler, and you could win a $10,000 dream vacation. Brought to you by Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back. 52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg joining you from the Palms Hotel and Casino Resort and Automobile Repair Shop in Las Vegas, Nevada, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We were just talking to Don George. Of course, the name of his book was Movable Feast from Lonely Planet. But what was really interesting about that is the rice pudding story that I told you about. Of course, there's always a backstory to that. And the backstory of that was for years in New York, there was a cab driver. His name was William Magala. He was from Alexandria, Egypt. And every chance, and he was such a cool cab driver. He just drove a yellow cab. I got his phone number. And so every time I was coming to Kennedy, every time I was coming to an airport, he'd actually meet me there in a regular yellow cab because he was just, like, so cool. And he'd bring his little six-year-old daughter, Christina. We'd sing songs in the car. And what the funny thing was, he always ran the meter, but I never paid him for the ride. At the end of the month, he just told me what I owed him, and I wrote him a check. So I never really had to go to my wallet every 5 minutes. It was a trust thing, and it was great. And one day, William said to me, you know, my brother Billy's getting married, and we'd like to invite you to the wedding. I said, oh, I'd be honored to go. The wedding was in Alexandria, Egypt. So I went. You have not lived until you've done a wedding at 11 o'clock at night, which is an Egyptian Coptic wedding, you know, and a guy named Greenberg. And let me tell you something, we had the best time ever. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, William said to me, are you hungry? I said, yeah. He said, let's go. I said, where are we going? He says, we're going to get rice pudding. And that's how I discovered the rice pudding in Alexandria, Egypt at 2:30 in the morning. One of the all-time great experiences that you never really expect until it happens. And that's the beauty and the surprise of travel. Let's go to the emails we've been getting. One from Dave in Townsville. In December, I'll be flying on a Thursday on Qantas through from Townsville to Brisbane. This is what Townsville's all about. To Singapore, to London. The Singapore-London leg will be in premium economy. I was intending to check in online so I can pick my seats earlier. Does this stop me from being able to upgrade if I'm simply checking in my suitcase? Also, how might I go about trying to upgrade while in transit? Well, checking in online and upgrading are two separate and distinct things. You got to check in to get at least one seat from which you can upgrade from. That doesn't necessarily mean you can upgrade online. The best way to upgrade in a situation like that, if you're not using mileage, is to get to the gate earlier and be really, really nice. Because right now, with airlines shrinking capacity, and you mentioned you're going in December, which is a premium month for Qantas since it's their high season in Southern Hemisphere, you might be out of luck. My rule of thumb, now let me tell you what I've done with economy in my old age here. In the old days, I used to always pick an aisle seat because I wanted to keep my options open and be off the plane first and not get hit by anything in the overhead compartment so I could get to it first when I landed. I've now changed my tune. On long flights, if I'm sitting in coach, give me the window seat. I want nobody crawling over me. I want nobody bothering me. I don't need to get off the plane fast. I just don't want to be bothered. Give me a set of headphones that makes me look like I'm landing an F-14 on an aircraft carrier. Give me a good iPod, and I'm done. And, you know, I've learned to sleep a long time ago in any conceivable position ever. And the best way for me to fly long haul these days, no matter what seat it says I'm sitting in, I developed what I call the center seat zen. I'm completely convinced I'll be sitting in the center seat. And then if I get the center seat, I'm not disappointed. And if I don't, I'm pleasantly surprised. So that's my advice. If you want to, first of all, you got to check in online if you can to secure the seat you want. Go for that window seat. Trust me, on a long flight. And then if you get a chance to upgrade, you do it at the gate, assuming somebody's in a good mood. Here's an email from E.F. Balsall. That's the name. How far in advance should you buy airline tickets to get the best buy, and will this ever change? Well, it's changing all the time. Airline fares are updated over 248,000 times a day. However, the model is changing for the simple reason that the airlines are shrinking capacity. And so fewer planes means fewer flights, means fewer seats, which means the law of supply and demand kicks in, which means airfares have nowhere to go but up. So the old days, I would say to you, never check in or never try to book a flight more than 45 days out because the computer's not set up to give you a discount. You want to wait a little bit longer to the last minute. I can't say that anymore because with the exception of like some high-volume dates like the Wednesday before Thanksgiving or the Friday before Super Bowl, you want to book as far in advance as you can except for overseas travel. That's when the game is still played the old-fashioned way because airlines have to fill seats. They can't reduce flights because they violate bilateral agreements. So there are a lot of empty flights between now and March on overseas flights, exception of the Southern Hemisphere, and that's when you can play games up until about 30 days before the flight. Everything else, you want to book for Thanksgiving, you're already too late. You want to book for Christmas, book right now. Do not wait. You want to book for Easter, you might want to wait just a little bit longer, but not beyond January 1st. That's the way the airline game is being played these days. It's not pretty, but that's the name of the game. Here's one from Kathleen. My 85-year-old mother-in-law is somewhat visually impaired, needs help to find a gate, seat, etc. Will be traveling alone and would like to visit family in England for a couple of months beginning in December. Any suggestions for the best airline as to comfort and most accommodating flights between LAX and London Heathrow? Well, between LAX and London, you've got American Airlines, you've got British Air, and you've got another one which I kind of like, which most people don't realize flies between LAX and London, and that's Air New Zealand. And they've come up with some really cool new economy seats that are coming online in December. How about that? So check that out, because they finally come up with an economy seat that allows people to stretch out lengthwise and comfortably. So check that out if you can. But that still doesn't get your mom over the hump in terms of getting to the gate. You need to call ahead, make sure there's somebody there with a wheelchair. Even though she can walk, get the wheelchair, because that will get her through stuff easier and get her on the plane. And that's really the key. So I hope that's helpful to you, Kathleen. Let me know what happens. And check out that secret flight on Air New Zealand. Well, that music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations sticking around, we'll be back with a whole lot more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Palms Hotel Resort and Casino right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. On the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard, Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful November weekend wherever you happen to be. Of course, we've been living on airplanes up and down, all around. I think today's about the only day I've not been on a plane in a long time, and I'm beginning to miss peanuts. Does that mean anything? I hope not. Want to know where we are? Get out your maps, boys and girls. 36 degrees, 5 minutes north, 115 degrees, 10 minutes west. We're coming to you from the Palms Place Hotel and Spa in Las Vegas, Nevada, and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. And we'll solve it right here on the air. Vegas, still one of the great icons in America. So many stories to be told here. Even though there's been such an excess in building, so many additional rooms, the place still continues to fill up, and it's still a buyer's market for that simple reason of the law of supply and demand. So other than maybe New Year's Eve, what great deals can you have here? And it's not just the room rate. They're packaging everything now in terms of show tickets. And, of course, our engineer Joe Sands' favorite opportunity for the all-day, all-you-can-eat buffet pass. I think it's about $25. You get seven separate meals, and I think they throw in the stretcher to take you to the hospital. In any case, let's go right to some of the emails. We got one from Barry in Walnut Creek, California. Your website says the best time to purchase the cheapest airline tickets is right after midnight on Tuesday or early Wednesday morning. I heard you speak in Walnut Creek last month and thought you had said the best time was right after midnight on Monday. Can you please clarify? Yes, here it is. You were right the first time. So was I. It's 1 minute after midnight Wednesday morning, so late Tuesday night, 12:01 a.m. Wednesday. And for those people who have not heard me say this before, let me elaborate. Most airline fare sales, they sneak them out over the weekends. And that's the time when you don't want to buy any tickets, because that's when everybody's matching and cross-cutting and undercutting and matching again. All that basically stops on Monday. And as you know, once you book an airline ticket, you're given 24 hours in which to purchase it. So all those people who booked those discount tickets by Monday, who did not purchase them by midnight Tuesday, guess what happens? All those airfares suddenly come flooding back into the airline's computer system at 1 minute after midnight Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, and you got about a two-hour window there for you to strike. Now, does that mean you go online? No, it does not. The myth of online is that all the available inventory is online. It's not. It never has been. It never will be. An opportunity here for you to actually let your fingers do the walking and talk to a human being. And those are the people who will have that inventory at their disposal. And the same thing, by the way, applies to hotels. All the stuff you see for hotels online is not a true reflection of the available inventory at individual hotels. You need to call those hotels directly. But you've heard me say that before. I won't elaborate on that. But I hope at least, Barry, you understand now. It's 1 minute after midnight, meaning 12:01 a.m. Wednesday morning for about 2 hours. And one other caveat here. That's 1 minute after midnight in the time zone where the airline is based. So if you're in Walnut Creek, California, and you want to fly on American Airlines, then you'd actually call it 1 minute after 10 p.m. California time, because Central Time is 2 hours ahead of you, or 1 minute after 9 p.m. if you were going to book on Delta, because they're based in Atlanta, which is Eastern time zone. So now you know the difference there. Here's one from Christy in South Dakota. My husband and I planned a March 2011 trip for our entire family, four generations, how cool is that, to the Moon Palace Resort in Cancun. Each time I hear about another beheading in Mexico, my nightmares increase. Are my fears justified? Is it safe for my family to vacation in Cancun? Assuming you can advise to help solve this dilemma for me would be greatly appreciated, blah, blah, blah. Well, Christy, I got news for you. It's time for everybody listening to this show to get a map. Has there been tremendous violence in Mexico? Yes, in border towns. I'm not suggesting you visit Nuevo Laredo or any of those locations, but Cancun is at least 900 miles south of that. There are no problems there of any significance whatsoever. In fact, we've done this radio show many, many times in the last year and a half from Cancun, from the Riviera Maya, from the Riviera Nayarit, from Punta Mita. I'm a huge fan of Mexico. And it's no different than saying, do you want to do the radio show in Beverly Hills or Compton? Do you want to do the radio show in, east of the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland or Shaker Heights? I mean, there are places you go and there are places you are exercising more caution. That's all I can say. Now, I'm not telling you not to exercise common sense, but I will tell you this, Christy. You'll have a great time there for the reasons that we just even explained in Las Vegas. There's excess capacity. In the service industry, the best time to go anywhere is when nobody else is going. You'll have the best time, the best service, the best experience, the best food, and the best deals. So I hope that's helpful for you. Bottom line is you still want to exercise common sense. There are certain places in any city you probably don't want to go out at night unescorted, but other than that, you will have a great time. I promise you that. The hotels there are not full, and they need to fill those rooms, and they will do that to your benefit. Here's one from Doris in Minneapolis. I called Delta for a quote on a round-trip ticket to Chicago. As I do not have a computer to process the ticket, I had to go to my daughter's the next day, and, of course, in one day, the same flight went from $209 to $313. What do I do? The next time you want to book a ticket, keep in mind, I said this before, I'll say it again, the airlines are updating their fares over 250,000 times a day. These fares are very fluid. They change by the hour. Sometimes they'll even change by the minute. So if you find a fare that you like and you don't have a PC, Doris, then call your daughter or anybody else who does and tell them to book it right away, because those will not last very long. Now, there's also the opportunity, more often than not, it doesn't happen these days, but it does occasionally happen where the fares actually go down. And there's Fare Compare, that's on a website, which you don't have because you don't have a PC, but your daughter might have it. There's YAPTA, YAPTA. Both of these offer really good search engines for alerting you when a fare in a particular market goes below a certain amount, which might entice you to buy the ticket earlier or more immediately than you otherwise would. So that's what I would do. There really is no recourse once the fare goes up, because all the airline is doing is saying, okay, we filled so many seats at this fare category, we only have another 20 to fill. We've already made our profit on the plane, so why not charge more? Because whoever's going to show up now is going to need to fly, and we might as well hose them. I mean, look, I was going the other day from Washington, D.C. to LaGuardia. 10 days earlier, the fare was $119. 3 days later, it was $194. And a day after that, it was $309 because they could. And by the way, with all due respect to the airlines, if you were running the airline, you'd do exactly the same thing. It's how you price your product to make the most amount of money based on the ebb and flow of the tidal chain known as supply and demand. So when you see a price that you like, you grab it. One other caveat, if the fare does go down, it better go down more than $150 because the ticket change fees these days are, guess what, $150. So if it doesn't go more than $150 down, it's a wash. You can't really get a refund. If it goes down more than $150, especially on higher-priced international tickets, you're in luck. So there you have that. I hope that's been helpful to you. When we come back, we're going to be joined by, I'm going to tell you this. We're going to be joined by Independent Traveler Times about traveling with kids. Isn't that fun? Yeah. How to avoid kids when you travel. There's a topic. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Palms in Las Vegas right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg with you from the Palms Place Hotel and Spa in Las Vegas, Nevada, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you can always email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. And as we do always at this point every week on the show, I encourage you to visit our imaginatively named website, petergreenberg.com, to get the comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing that essential hard work in Haiti, in Western China, in Chile, and, of course, in the Gulf. And for those people who don't think Haiti should be front-page news, you're wrong. It remains front-page news because the rebuilding effort there, at least for us, it's front-page news, is going to take at least a decade. This is really hard stuff. And, of course, you've read the recent news about the cholera outbreak out there. It makes stuff even tougher. But look at that list on our website. You will be pleasantly surprised about all the different opportunities you have to get personally, physically, actively involved based on your own level of expertise or experience or language skills or just physical ability. It's the best vacation you can give yourself because you're also giving back to others. So I just want to make that reminder to you, and let us know what you do because we'll put you on the air. We want to hear what you're doing and where you're doing it. It's certainly not limited just to Chile, Western China, Haiti, and the Gulf. There are so many other places in the world where you can be of help when you travel. So check it out and then check back in with us. We're now joined by a regular on our show who has the notorious distinction of traveling as much as, if not more than I do, Simon Cooper, the President and Managing Director for Asia-Pacific at the Ritz-Carlton. Hey, Simon.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
We find you back, unusually, back in the U.S. today. I'm shocked.
Yeah, that is true. I'm back in the U.S. for about 10 days. I had a board meeting to attend, and I'll get my beef out of the way because you always want to know my beefs, right?
Of course. Listen, you can't travel today without at least being angry at something.
Well, last Monday I have to go to Memphis, and I was trying to prove the rule that the first flight of the day is always the best one to take. Because the plane arrives the night before, everybody's ready, there's no chance of a delay unless it's weather. So beautiful Monday morning in Washington, heading to Memphis. I head off to the airport for my 7 a.m. flight. And as soon as I get there, I see on the board 9:30 departure, 2.5 hour delay. It's Delta, by the way, going to Memphis. The plane is sitting there. Everybody's there. What I didn't find out until afterwards, my wife got to wake up at 6 a.m., so they at least tried to advise me. But, you know, who would go for a flight these days and leave home, you know, now before the flight goes?
Right.
Anyhow, so it disproves the idea. I think it was a crew issue because the plane was there. I have checked today to see if this is a regular thing they do, and I'm delighted to say today it left 3 minutes early. So obviously.
Yes, but you know what, Simon? I'm going to tell you a little hint about that.
What's the hint?
A lot of planes that overnight, if they get in late, the crew needs at least 8 hour turnaround.
That's what I'm guessing.
And so basically the crew was illegal to go any earlier than when the plane was then rescheduled to leave. So you were basically hostage to their sleep patterns. Of course, you want a crew that's been well-rested, don't you?
I prefer a crew that was well-rested. Luckily, I didn't have a deadline.
Well, since you're now in Asia, I'll give you my great Asia story about what happens when planes are delayed. I was actually flying from Beijing to Hong Kong a number of years ago. I was at the airport, got there plenty of time. The plane was on the ground, just like your plane was on the ground. And I get to the gate, and we're all waiting to board. And we're about 40 minutes away from boarding when a very timid, nervous gate agent goes to the microphone and and says, "Very sorry, but this plane very sick." So we're
that.
Not. So wait, it gets better. It says, "This plane very sick, so we're going to the next gate, and we take that plane." So, okay, thank you for letting us know. We all get our bags and walk over one more gate, and we wait for the next plane. It's not at the gate yet. We see it come in. It lands. It taxis to the gate. Everybody gets off. And now this is going to be our plane going to Hong Kong from Beijing. So we're waiting, and all of a sudden the same woman, now looking even more nervous, timid, and afraid, comes back to the microphone and goes, and this is where you say to yourself, how stupid am I? Okay, here it comes. She goes, "Very sorry, but this plane more sick than the other plane. So we'll take the other plane." She sent us back to the first plane. And like idiots, we all grabbed our bags and went, okay. And we went back and got on the other plane, and it took off. And, well, obviously I'm talking to you today, Simon, so it landed. But
you made it.
Yeah. So that's the way the Chinese were doing it.
Flying sick planes.
Well, at least flying less sick planes.
Less sick planes.
Yeah.
Japan, very interesting news coming out of there. Haneda opens, which is wonderful for everybody who's fed up paying the enormous amount of money you have to pay to get from Narita into Tokyo. And but I did have, I tweeted my favorite sign, travel sign, which is as you go into security at Narita Airport, there is a sign in English and Japanese, to samurai. You ever seen this one?
No.
It's to samurai. No sword allowed in aircraft. And so I tweeted it, and so you know, who says the Japanese don't have a good sense of humor?
No, they should have said it's a harikari free zone.
They should have. Yeah, but I was, you know, over there. One of my bucket list items I did in Tokyo about 3 weeks ago. A friend of mine was retiring as a sumo wrestler. And if you've ever been to a retirement party, 11,000 people go, and he sits in the middle of the ring, and you pay with small envelopes of money for the right to cut off a little bit of his hair. And that's how he gets his retirement.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. Really, really great. And then I went to a birthday party up at Gorikoden, which is in Hakone, which is absolutely one of my favorite ryokans, absolutely glorious little hotel.
Well, Simon, explain a ryokan.
A ryokan basically is a Japanese inn. It goes back to the old days, and these were small inns. Hakone, which is about an hour and a half from Tokyo, is a famous area because it's up in the hills, and they also have hot sulfur springs. So it's absolutely gorgeous. They have this enormous spring, and they have a men's side and a women's side. And for your interest, it's open 24 hours a day, but at 3 a.m. in the morning, they switch them.
So I'll give you a little historic note here. For those people who want to know what the original ryokans looked like, this is a piece of trivia even you won't know, Simon. It's an old movie with William Holden and Mickey Rooney called The Bridges at Toko-ri. And it was about the Korean War, but they did all their R&R in Japan.
Japan.
And it was about a love affair that William Holden had with a Japanese woman in Japan in the movie. And, of course, it takes place in the ryokan.
You truly are a mine of information, Peter.
I know, but this is Netflix opportunity for you now. You can actually go check it out.
Go check it out.
Now, I should tell everybody that Simon, I used to think Simon had the best job in the world as the COO of Ritz-Carlton. Then he got the bester job. How about that for a word? He got even a better job. He's now the president and managing director for Asia Pacific, which means you get to hang out in Hong Kong.
I get to hang out in Hong Kong, and I get to still be very close to a lot of great Ritz-Carltons, but now I have a portfolio with a lot of other great hotels in it.
And one of those hotels is opening soon. Is it going to be the tallest building in Hong Kong?
It's going to be definitely the tallest building in Hong Kong. It's the tallest hotel in the world. That will be the Ritz-Carlton Hong Kong, which will open early next year. Top of the hotel is at 118 stories, Peter, and you can sit actually outside and dine al fresco at 118 stories up.
Wow.
You can swim at 117.
Okay, wait a minute. Then here's what you do. Speaking of movies, one of the movies you should be showing in every room of that hotel is Mel Brooks' High Anxiety.
I'd like
Come on.
You think I should, huh?
Oh, my God. Well, you know, speaking of high hotels or tall hotels, of course, the Park Hyatt in Shanghai is unbelievable.
Yes.
I mean, I'm sure you've seen it because it's not far from your hotel there. I mean, it's unreal what they're able to do now. But now your hotel at 118 stories is not a hotel. It's office building and residential.
And the hotel begins at 102. So we have 102nd up to 118. It's the tower is nearly all offices, and then there's a wonderful shopping center underneath, and then all of the it connects to all of the metros all over Hong Kong, and the new high-speed rail for Guangzhou is going to come in underneath as well. So, as you know, the infrastructure they do over there is incredible, and how they link it into sort of key centers. So, we're sitting right on top of that.
And you're on the Kowloon side, correct?
Yes, correct. Right wow. Where the new airport tunnel goes underneath, right on the Kowloon side, which is, you know, is emerging because there's not a lot of room in Central anymore.
So basically, does that mean you can just go right from the hotel to the airport easily?
Very easily. It's right there. The MTR goes right through, and you're the closest to the airport. Obviously, it's probably about a 20-minute ride, would be my guess. But
I'll make you a prediction. At 118 stories, you probably are going to end up discovering you have your own weather systems.
we we'll definitely have our own weather systems, because if you've been to Hong Kong, as you know, when you go to the peak on the central side, you know how the weather changes when you get up there. So we'll be as tall as the peak.
Amazing. Well, Simon, I'm looking forward to coming over and seeing you. Of course, I won't be taking the flight from Memphis to get there, but that's certainly not the first flight of the day. Simon Cooper, the President and Managing Director of Asia Pacific for the Ritz-Carlton. Simon, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Peter.
To you soon. We appreciate that. Back with more from the Palms Place Hotel and Spa in Las Vegas, right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Palms Place in Las Vegas. Taking your calls at 887-3837. That's, of course, 888-887-3837 or 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. As I talked about earlier, you know, let's face the old W.C. Fields quote. There are two types of children traveling. Two types of children. I love this. I've given away the joke. Two types of travel, flying first class and then traveling with children. And joining us now from the independenttraveler.com, Sarah Schlichter. Do you agree with that, Sarah?
Yeah, sometimes it feels that way. How are you doing, Peter?
Good. I mean, children are a sort of an unavoidable nuisance sometimes, and sometimes they're an unavoidable pleasure. It's not always the bad screaming kid, but there seems to be sort of an inverse rule of travel that is, you know, the louder the screaming kid, the closer he's sitting to you.
Yeah, and that's the reason some people are always kind of crying out for family sections on airplanes. I don't know that that'll ever happen. I feel like no matter where on the plane that kid is, you're going to hear it. But
well, actually, I have a great place for the kid on the plane. It's the bulkhead seat.
Not because of extra space.
No, the bulkhead seat, because if he wants to kick somebody, he's kicking a wall and not you.
There you go. That's a good plan.
I mean, seriously, I mean, that's where you want to put him. But there are other rules of thumb here that you suggest, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to avoid kids while traveling, I mean, you may not be able to do anything about the plane trip, but plan your trip for when school is in session. So if you can avoid summer, you know, Christmas holidays, Easter and spring break, those times of year, you'll do a lot better. Fall is often a great time to go because you still have kind of warm temperatures lingering in early fall, but you can still all the kids are back in school, and you won't see barely any families.
Right. Well, for me, there's 1 week more than any other week of the year if you want to travel anywhere. In fact, it's even more interesting when you say if you really want to travel with your kids, it's the best week to go because there won't be any other kids either. And you know what that is?
What's that?
The week after Thanksgiving. It's the dead week.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's traveling that week. So if you want to go to Disney World with your kids, that's when you take them. Or if you want to guarantee that you'll be on a plane without many kids, that's the week to go. You'll own it.
Yeah, that's a great time to go. I think a lot of people are trying to, you know, plan Christmas things or whatever, and they don't feel like traveling. That's a great time.
And also, for any parents listening to the show, if you really want to do yourself a favor, and quite frankly, your kids a favor, and then, of course, by inference, me too, learn the concept of extra credit assignments from your teachers, and don't take the kids out of school when everybody else is out of school. Take the kids out of school when everybody is in school. Take another week off and get an extra credit assignment to go to Europe or go to the Caribbean or go to Hawaii or even go visit your relatives and have the kids do an extra credit assignment, and therefore you're not going to be screaming around with other kids.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And, I mean, of course, travel is very educational. So if you can work it out with the child's school, that's a great idea.
And remember my philosophy, which I completely stole from Mark Twain, never let school interfere with your education.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, but you also have an idea about not just when to go, but where to go.
Yeah, I mean, families tend to flock to the beaches, to national parks, certain types of attractions. And so that doesn't mean that you can't go to those places at all, but if you, you know, again, try to go in the off season or try to find beaches that are a little bit more isolated, harder to get to, don't have maybe restaurants and snack bars and the kind of, you know, amenities that make life easier for families. You'll tend to have a quieter experience. And with national parks, I just went to Acadia National Park in early October, and other than the weekends where we did see some families, it was just very quiet and a much, you know, older crowd during the week. So fall is, again, a great time to go to a national park.
Okay, I've got one for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you talk about a quieter experience or a less frenetic experience. Listen, I owe my parents a big thank you because I started traveling as a child because they encouraged me to travel. So maybe I was one of those whining kids. But I'll tell you what they didn't do. And it all gets down to not where you went or when you went. It all gets down to something else, and that is what you eat. If you're going to feed your kids food that is high in sugar, you know, they're going to go nuts. I mean,
yeah.
they're going to be running around hyper all the time.
Yeah, it can be kind of hard to eat well on the road because, you know, restaurant meals tend to be kind of heavy and unhealthy. But, yeah, if you can take your kids to some of the more, you know, a healthier option and make sure, maybe stop by a supermarket along the way and grab some fruit and nuts and healthier snacks, that'll certainly help keep them a little bit more sedate.
Well, not only that, I mean, everything that's like high sugar content, they go absolutely nuts, and I see it happen all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what do you see the parent feeding the kid right before they get on the airplane? Ice cream.
And I think they use it as a bribe, you know, like, okay, we'll give you some ice cream if you just stay quiet on the plane, but that's kind of counterintuitive. It really...
No.
Yeah.
By the same token, I know some parents, I'm not encouraging this, but that they'll order milk for the child and put a little Kahlua in it.
Okay.
You know, they basically want to do, it's like kitty downers, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
I know they want these kids to do a nap. But here's the thing. If you're going to be at an airport waiting for a plane, get all the energy out there. Run around the terminal.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean,
play a game of tag between gates. Do anything you can to get that kid's energy down so when they get on the plane, they do what I do, slip into a coma.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, airports are huge. You can waste lots and lots of time walking around the different gates and terminals. So, and there's plenty to see and plenty to do. So that's a great idea.
You got it. Well, you can read more about this, of course, in independenttraveler.com. Our guest, Sarah Schlichter. Hey, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
When we come back, more from Las Vegas at the Palms Place Hotel and Spa when we come back right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you, coming from the Palms Place Hotel and Spa in Las Vegas, Nevada. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-887-3837. 888-PETER, if you can't get through on the phones, of course you know the drill by now. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we'll solve it right here on the air. Speaking about questions, what a surprise. The Department of Transportation reports a jump in gripes about airline service. Oh, I am shocked. Are you shocked? It's getting worse. Why? Well, you know what? We talked about this earlier on the show with Arnie Weissman, the Travel Weekly editor-in-chief. Are the airlines in the travel business or the transportation business, and are we going from being travelers to being, well, human freight? Arnie basically contended, well, like I do now, we're a bunch of human freight. And so we're already coming on the plane with essentially unrealistic expectations, and then, of course, they're never met. What's worse is that I've not been on a plane that's not been completely full in at least a year. And it gets worse than that because when the airlines want to charge you for checked bags, with the exception maybe of Southwest, I just had an experience coming into Las Vegas on a U.S. airplane. I flew first from LaGuardia to Charlotte on one flight and then connected from Charlotte to Las Vegas. So this happened on both flights. They were both Airbuses. One was an Airbus 321, one was an Airbus 320, so both very similar planes. Of course, both planes were full. What a surprise. I knew that. And then within about 5 minutes of the start of boarding, the flight attendants made an announcement, and they made an announcement at the gate as well. All the overhead bins are already full. which meant we didn't board on time and we didn't leave on time because nobody had any place to put their carry-on bags because people were coming on this plane with everything short of their dead grandmother and a stuffed moose with bags that had wheels on them, and there literally was no place to put it. And quite frankly, I don't blame them. Who wants to spend all that money to check your bags? And but here's the irony of it. Because it couldn't fit in the overhead compartment, what did the airline do? They checked their bags at the gate for free. So let's discuss the logic here, all right? If you, I mean, it's a no-brainer. What would you rather do? Spend $60, you know, $25 for the first bag and $35 for the second. A round-trip ticket is now going to cost you an additional $120 just in bag fees. So what would you rather do? Do it that way or somehow get your bags through the conveyor belt at security and have the airline check it at the gate? Well, duh. Of course you want to get them to check it at the gate. And that's what everybody's doing now. It's this sort of like game where we're beating the airlines at their own game, playing by their rules. And everybody's making believe like, you know, it's like the Claude Rains character in Casablanca, shocked to find out that gambling is going on at Rick's casino, but collecting his winnings from the night before. Well, hello, we're all hip to it now. And yet it just makes the boarding process a zoo. It's crazy. And it borders on a lot of chaos. So, you know, I still like to FedEx my bags. I avoid all of that, but if you don't have a choice and you don't want to spend the money to FedEx your bag or check it, play that game. People are doing it all the time. Now, some of the airlines, I will tell you now, they're putting like little automaton monitors, you know, other people at the security checkpoints, stopping people from going through if they think the bag is too big. But more often than not, I see those bags getting through. Now, remember, if you're going to put your checked bag through the security, remember what you can't put in a carry-on bag. You can't put your aerosol deodorant. You can't put your moisturizers, your lotions, your potions. You can't put in the gift bottle of wine that your relative gave you to take back home. So you're going to hold up that line. So, you know, you got to figure out what you're going to do before you're doing it, and then go ahead and do it. But and don't lose sight of what you're doing. If you're playing the game, just make sure that what's in your checked bag that you're going to try to put in as a carry-on bag doesn't carry those ingredients. A little update from the front. We've had these people on the show before. The all-you-can-fly pass from JetBlue, did it work? You bet it worked. It worked beyond imagination, and why wouldn't it? It gave everybody an opportunity for $499 to fly the entire JetBlue system for a month. What a great deal. I love deals like that. And as we get closer to the end of the year, we're going to see something else happen, which is near and dear to a subject to me as you can get, because it deals with frequent flyer miles. You're going to see something called the mileage run. You know what a mileage run is? This is when you know you've been flying too long. This is when you know you become a frequent flyer fanatic and a junkie. And that is when you're about 4,000 miles short of getting to the next tier, like gold status or platinum status or cubic zirconium status, and it's getting close to December, and you will do anything you can to get those last 4,000 miles under your belt. So you'll actually get on a plane and fly to places you have no intention of going to, just to do a round trip to come back to get up to that next tier. Now, that sounds great, but when we come back, I'm going to tell you why it doesn't work. Back with more from Peter Greenberg Worldwide and the Palms Place Resort and Casino and Hotel and Spa in Las Vegas right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the Palms Place Hotel and Spa in Las Vegas, Nevada, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We were just talking about the concept of the mileage run, how these frequent flyer fanatics will do anything in their power to get those last needed miles in under their belt before the end of the year so they can qualify for the next tier status. Now, traditionally and historically, that did make a difference because it qualified you more for upgrades. It qualified you more for other offers and for better treatment from the airline. But in this day and age, it's getting tougher and tougher and tougher to redeem miles. And nobody knows that better than I do. I was going over to Jordan to see some friends. And as you know, I have a long history in Jordan. We've done specials there. And I said, wow, I have all these miles on all these airlines, right? And I better have all these miles on all these airlines because of what I do. Let's redeem the miles, and I'll just travel first class to and relax to Jordan. So I called the mileage people at Delta, and their answer was, no seats available. Now I ask you, who's going to Jordan in October? Not that many people, but they didn't want to release the seats. Now, Delta has mileage partners in Air France. They wouldn't release the seats. Not a shot. So I said, okay, when will there be seats to Jordan? Nothing till next March. All right, so now I go to United Airlines. That's the Star Alliance. Remember, I've got bazillions of miles, which I never get a chance to use. Here's my one opportunity to do it to a location that not that many people are going to. Now, United has partners in the Star Alliance, which include Lufthansa and many other carriers that happen to fly to Amman. Guess what? Not a single seat available. Not a single seat available, again, forever. So then I figured, okay, how about Continental? No. Then I went back to Delta, and they told me they had one seat available in coach, but the actual mileage needed was so huge that on principle alone, even though I've never used these miles, I just didn't want to get rid of it. So finally, I figured, wait, there's got to be another way to skin this cat. And there was. I paid for the ticket. But wait, it gets worse. I paid for the coach ticket, and I figured, okay, I'll pay for the coach ticket and then use miles to upgrade. Little known fact, ladies and gentlemen, you can pay for the ticket and upgrade on that ticket only on the carrier in which you have the miles, not a partner carrier. So if I wanted to fly American Airlines from New York to London, I could upgrade using miles. London to Amman, can't do it. And it just gets crazier and crazier. So take a look at the CBS Evening News in the next couple of weeks. We're going to do, hopefully, the definitive piece on everything you need to know about the true value and worth, at least for you, of the frequent flyer programs. And what's interesting about them is how much they're worth to the airlines. In fact, who do you think was the biggest creditor when Delta Airlines was in bankruptcy that kept Delta Airlines flying? Was it General Electric that made the engines? No. Was it Boeing that made their planes? No. Obviously, both in their best interest to keep Delta flying. No, it was American Express, because American Express had co-branded their credit card with the Delta Airlines mileage program. And basically, it was in American Express's best interest to keep Delta flying, because if Delta didn't fly, who would want to carry an American Express card with Delta to earn miles on an airline that either didn't fly or you couldn't use? Even now, who do you think is advancing hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to every single airline? Well, it's called Citibank or Chase or any of the big banking operations that have credit card affinity deals with these different airlines for their mileage programs. We're talking $250 to $500 million advances against mileage sales to the airlines or from the airlines to the credit card companies. And it's a great game for the airlines because the airlines are essentially printing the currency and they're also controlling the redemption. So if they're selling miles to banks and grocery stores and florists and mortgage bankers at whatever it is, 1.5 cents a mile or 1.6 cents a mile to them, that's just income the airlines get that's over the top, you know, goes right to their bottom line because there are no costs associated against that for one reason. The airlines also control the redemption. They're selling miles to these entities, their mileage marketing partners, knowing full well they have no intention whatsoever of letting anybody redeem them. And how do we know that? Just look at their annual reports. They're called the 10K reports that every publicly traded airline has to file with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And what do they say in those 10K reports? They boast to their shareholders, right? It's back to what Arnie Weissman and I were talking about earlier about shareholder value. They boast to their shareholders how difficult they make it for anybody to redeem their miles, so they're keeping their redemption levels under 10%. That's a 90% return on investment. The Sopranos worship at the airline's altar. loan sharks here in Vegas can't get that kind of return. How amazing is that? You know what I think? Pretty amazing. So check out the CBS Evening News in the next couple of weeks to see the definitive report on that. Don't say I didn't tell you so. That music means you're out of time for the show. I want to thank, of course, Joe Sands, our regular engineer here in Las Vegas. Thank you, Joe, for coming by. Mark Worrell, our chief engineer. Jessica Silverman, our producer. Shelley Gonsarowski, our chief producer out in Seattle. Westwood One folks, and, of course, the Palms Place Hotel and Spa in Las Vegas. We'll see you next week, ladies and gentlemen, from another distant location somewhere around the world. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.